Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm absolutely thrilled. I got the people from Little Brown and the author to agree to a special sneak preview during our drive. The new book is The Almost Moon, and the author is Alice Sebold. When her first novel, The Lovely Bones, came out on Bookworm, we had used it as a book club book because I fell in love with it from the very first page. In fact, I had read only the first page before I said, we've got to do this. Once again, The Almost Moon by Alice Sebold has one of those absolutely startling first sentences from which there is no turning back. That is, when all is said and done, killing my mother came easily. Now, Alice, did you start with that sentence?
No, I didn't. I kind of took my rather long journey to try to find the voice to tell the novel in, and that's where I ended, actually, the initial journey, which was a couple of years of working with different voices and, you know, different ways to tell it and all that. And it's as if when I wrote that line and kept going, obviously, with, you know, the first session of that voice, but there was something that I realized, okay, this is different than everything I've been doing for the last 2 years. Something has happened. So there really is, I wait for that sense to tell me that, okay, this is it. So.
Well, what I've noticed in all three of your books, the first, in fact, was a memoir called Lucky. You have mastered the ability to tell a reader things that he doesn't want to know and she doesn't want to hear, and yet we, all of us, have got to continue. And we're watching in the enunciation of this book as a woman kills her 88-year-old mother, smothers her, and that's only the start because it liberates a sense of madness in her that is the result of having been in the shadow of this woman for all of her life. And what we're going to be reading is, in a sense, a mystery story, not who did it or what was done, but what happens when a woman begins to take responsibility for what she's done and over a 24-hour period comes, in a way, to understand it.
Right, correct. I think it's also for me, how frightening freedom is, the freedom that you actually desire. You know, there's, in this case, the main character, Helen, who is the woman who kills her mother, there's a comfort in oppression. There's a sameness in limitation. And when you finally get what you say you've always wanted or sensed you've always wanted, which is freedom from that oppression, what happens at that point?
Is there a way in which the author joins Helen in taking this risk, that writing itself is like a dull tether unless you do the extraordinary thing that risks freedom?
Oh, sure. I mean, I'm not, I've never been really interested in the novels that I read or potentially could write where I sense a hanging back on the part of the author. I feel like the author, as well as the character, should risk it all if they're going to put something on a page and ask other people to read it.
What did you risk here?
I think I risked my mother feeling rather threatened. I think, you know, I was really intrigued by working with all those difficult parts of a very close relationship with one's parent, what one owes their parent, and whether there's a sense of reciprocity in a relationship with a parent or not. And also the idea that we are living to an incredibly older age now. And so the traditional model where you took care of your parent and then once the parent died, you were the person who kind of owned the family name and, you know, all of that stuff, that has passed us anymore. My grandmother died when she was 96. And my mother was already in her 70s. And so I watched my own mother be an incredibly dutiful daughter, which was not a natural role to her, and then be free, quote unquote, upon the planet at 73 years old. It was very unsettling experience for her.
Now, I wondered, there's a feeling in this book that is not there in The Lovely Bones. In The Lovely Bones, we go through a rape and a death, but we, as they say ferociously in story meetings, like the character. Susie Salmon is someone that readers love. What I loved about this book is that it's as if from the very first page you say to the reader, you needn't like this woman, but you will understand her.
I think that's true. And I like the idea that some people may actually even like her by the end. And what's interesting to me is whether you have to like a character in order to identify with them, I think you don't necessarily have to like them. And I think that identifying with somebody who is not easily likable is a challenge to the reader, you know, because then you are actually identifying with someone who has some unsympathetic character traits, which means you're acknowledging your own.
Yes, exactly. It seems to me that this is demanding that the reader return to the roots of fiction, which is not to read about yourself but and everything you know and like, but to read about the other and be accepting and even patient in that acceptance. Now, in this case, it's a very tricky tightrope you walk because the child who kills the parents is, in a sense, a staple of a certain kind of black comedy. We've even made Lizzie Borden into a joke. What you've done is double-sided in that you've returned the seriousness of the act. While this is a wildly funny novel, we understand this as an action in real life, in real time. You're not doing bravura stunts with the ugliness of the imagination.
Right. I mean, I would say that I as a reader, have never found that attractive to me. Because, see, that's when I do feel that the writer is pulling back from real risk-taking. It's when you approach some of this stuff in the real time that you have to be with that character doing those things, believing the level of seriousness, not only of the act, but the things that lead to the act. And that's a level of intimacy between the characters, both within the work and between yourself and the characters that you're writing about, which I think many people are frightened of because it does take you into some very dark parts of your subconscious.
Now, we're talking here in August, 3 months before the publication date of this book. So neither of us knows what the response is going to be. And that's part of the thrill that I like taking on Bookworm, choosing a book that I feel the readers will like. I don't need to know what the reviewers say. I know what my listeners are going to care for because it's what I care for. But what are your fears?
I don't really... I think my fears is that I will not be able to keep my vow of not reading any of the reviews. You know, you just see something, you're like, well, I'll just read a little bit. Blah, blah, blah. And before you know it, you've read the whole thing. But I do feel good about the work, and I feel like I continue to just be the writer that I am. So I think that... If I had felt that I had written something from the success of Lovely Bones or warped because of that success or desire for people to continue to like me, Then I would have fears related to that. But I really just wrote the book that was kind of next in my pipeline, regardless of how people felt about what that product was ultimately.
Yes, because I think everyone will be talking about this book. Won't you want to know what they're saying, or will you hear anyway?
I think it kind of filters through to you, despite your best efforts. So,
what exercises, if any, do you do to steel yourself to be willing to let people not like you? Because that is, in fact, what this character has to do. She has to tell her husband, her children, that she has murdered her mother, that she's killed her mother. And in fact, she has to bring herself to the point where she can use that word, killed.
I think, you know, in some sense, I'm somewhat of an isolate. So I moved to Ojai near Santa Barbara shortly after the Lovely Bones kind of caused some attention to be paid to me. And I think one of the reasons why I did that is because I wanted to write the next book in as much isolation as I could handle and still be able to go get takeout food. and that allowed me not to, interact with other writers or the world of publishing and all of that stuff. So you just let that stuff fall away. It takes about a year, I think. And then you're back into that dark, inky place where your work comes from.
It's wonderful. I can't think of very many cases where after an enormous success, a writer has taken a huge risk. In fact, usually the peril of the second book is about that desire to nurture the audience that came flocking to the first one. Did you know from the moment you started that you were about to take on something perhaps alienating and at any rate completely new?
Well, I think the idea of the book had happened for me, the obsessions that the book deals with, before Lovely Bones was published. So I stayed with my obsessions instead of changing tactic after Lovely Bones did well. And I'm also blessed to have an agent who's got a pessimistic streak, a mile long. And when he read the first batch of pages in Helen's voice, he called me and I wasn't home. And so he left on the machine all the various different groups of people who would, not be liking this particular novel. So I just was like, OK, that's a good thing to start with. I don't know. I think that the biggest danger for anybody who's had success is the desire for people to like them. You just have to write your work or do whatever your work is and not worry about having people like you, because by that nature, you're just going to water down whatever it is that you create.
I've been talking with Alice Siebold, author most recently of The Almost Moon, published by Little Brown. Thank you, Alice, for joining me. Everyone in my audience is going to be getting the opportunity to order their book early by subscribing to KCRW, and I thank you and your publisher for participating in this.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Now the book of the mouse.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.